Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. My name is Colleen Dietz. Join me and my guests each week for an entertaining recap of the hottest topics in Mormonism. We keep tabs on social media and headline news so you don't have to. Don't miss our live pro tips as you adjust to your new and exciting post-Mormon life. Mormon Happy Hour is here to bring you the irreverent side of Mormonism, wherever you may be. Hello, my favorite listener friends. Thank you so much for being right there for me and supporting me. And I absolutely love hearing your feedback. Chloe, my good friend, left a fabulous message on Mormon Happy Hour. That number is 435-494-1427. Did I say that too fast? 435-494-1427. So call like Chloe did and leave me a voicemail because I absolutely love hearing back from you guys, especially when I'm being this like introspective, vulnerable, I'm going to tell you all my feelings type of a take you on my journey of post-Mormonism. So it's really great to feel like I'm actually having a conversation with you guys rather than just like talking at you. So hit me up. I just wanted to jump in today because I'm really excited. I have a lot of things I want to talk to you about. And here goes. Wait, a little bit of housekeeping. So sorry. I did want to give a massive shout out to, I did have someone join us on Patreon this week. Woo whoop. So welcome, Gary. Thank you so much for joining us on Patreon. Patreon gives you an extra peek into bonus material occasionally when I can get my shit together and put it out. I struggle with videos. I just don't know how. I'm learning. And also, you get full video of most all of my interviews and episodes that I do with a guest. So that's fun. And you get swag. Swag's the best. I love my it's bumper sticker size. I have a car window sticker now that says Mormon Happy Hour, and I really love it. So if you want one, hit me up on Patreon. We'll work it out. I think that's it for housekeeping. Thank you so much for sticking through with me. Okay, so I had two things that I mentioned to you that I wanted to talk about in the last episode. One of them is I still carry my Temple Recommend in my wallet 7 years later, and we're going to try and kind of unpack that, or I'm going to unpack it, and you're going to listen and laugh at me or relate. I don't know. So that's going to be fun. And then also my next topic that I wanted to kind of talk about is I have boobs, and that's been a challenge growing up Mormon with super, you know, Orthodox, conservative, modesty, purity culture parents. That's been a rough go. So yeah, that I wanted to talk about. And also I am doing a 21 days of mindfulness little course experience with my friend Elena Thurston. She is the one who hosted the retreat that I went to a couple weeks back that was very life-changing. So I went ahead and took another course from her, and this is a 21-day check-in on mindfulness. And I've learned a lot, and it's really great to kind of keep the momentum going on this self-improvement journey that I'm taking. So I have a few thoughts that I had gathered from that I wanted to share with you, and also some other great resources. I'm kind of in this state right now where I want to be a student of scholars, and scholars or experts, meaning anyone who is farther along in this journey of self-discovery and authenticity and success in life than I am. And so that means podcasts, that means reading books, lots of cool things. So and I'm kind of doing a shotgun approach where I feel like I have way too many things going on at once, which it's good because I'm immersed in it. And sometimes it's frustrating because I feel like I drop something, but I can pick it up later. It's totally fine. So, and I'm glad that I have you, that you can be my sounding board, and I can just spit all this out there, and it's recorded. So you can give me feedback. You can maybe learn some things from it, or and it's always there for me. I can go back and listen to where I was at this point in my life. So here we go. I have my journal in front of you, so I wanted to just talk about the 21 days of mindfulness first, and maybe some quotes and things that I had gathered in kind of that personal journey. So something I wrote down on the first day is that self-love begins with mindfulness. Now, if mindfulness is a new concept for you, basically the way my understanding of mindfulness is at the moment is mindfulness is being aware of the thoughts that are in your head. That's it. Being aware of them. You're listening to the thoughts in your head. So it's kind of mindfulness is taking a step back, taking some time, using tools like meditation to listen to your thoughts and to kind of use that listening as a gauge to say, is this something I want in my life? Is this something I want going on in my head? And you can kind of, you know, do some inventory, do some house cleaning, realize why maybe you continue the same destructive behaviors that you want to change. I think it's really great. And it's a weird thing to change over in your mind from living life and being in survival mode and not being aware of your thoughts to suddenly listening to your thoughts. It's crazy. It's crazy how much is going on in there that I wasn't aware of before. So self-love begins with mindfulness. What that means to me is that a lot of times, like I mentioned earlier, the thoughts in your brain, the thoughts that are going on constantly aren't always the most full of love for yourself. They can be very critical and judgmental and condescending and just all over shamey and guilty. And so if we begin to be mindful and listen to those thoughts, then we begin to take an inventory and make decisions on what kind of thoughts we want. And that's the first step to self-love. If we care about the things that our brain is telling us and we want to change that, then, you know, that's how we show love to ourselves, is by being encouraging and listening to our fears and accepting our fears and not running away from that and learning from our fears. So self-love, mindfulness, is the only way to receive and accept love from others. So if you don't love yourself, then you can't accept love from others. There's just this brick wall. It just won't go because it doesn't compute. So as you begin to love yourself, you can begin to accept love from others, and then you can in turn show love to others because you are beginning to learn how to show love to yourself. So mindfulness can teach you to embrace your present, love your current reality, and commit to an amazing future. I love that thought. So something I wrote down, or a thought that went through my mind as I was listening to this course on mindfulness, is I'm pushing myself towards being a life coach. That's something that that I want to pursue. I want to kind of leave behind my past educational and professional experience in the mental health field and take it somewhere else with me. I want to work somewhere different than the field that I've been currently working in. It's toxic and it's not fulfilling to me, so I want to take what I know and what I've learned and apply it somewhere else. So right now I am pursuing life coaching because that's somewhere that I can continue to serve people who want to be served, which is different than the population that I have served in the past within mental health. So that's just me. So the thought that went through my head while I was listening to Elena give this particular lesson on mindfulness is that here she is, you know, being a coach and teaching mindfulness. And I'm like, well, she's way farther along on the journey than I am. I don't have that to offer. I couldn't do it. And immediately I heard the thought. I heard the negative thought. I heard the self-limiting belief that I can't do life coaching. And I heard it and I was like, wait, wait a second. And so then I started writing down some affirmations on failure. And so one that I wrote down, if you aren't failing, you aren't trying. And I thought that was such an original thought. I was so proud of myself. And then I Googled it and it was Woody Allen that said that. So, you know, me and Woody Allen, man, we're on the same wavelength. So write it down or think about it. If you aren't failing, you aren't trying. Also, failure is part of progress. Failure means you're trying. Be proud of your failures. Think about that for a minute. Being proud of your failures, because it means you tried. It means that you overcame the fear and you tried. So another thing that I wrote in bold and drew little, you know, those little sun rays around, you know, that really important thing that you write in your journal that you want to focus on. I wrote down locked in fear. And that kind of brings me to an episode that I listened to on the Broken Brain podcast, which is excellent. I highly recommend it. One of my good friends that went on the retreat with me recommended it to us, and it has been a life changer for me. So Peter Krohn was the guest on episode number 55 of the Broken Brain podcast. And he had some excellent quotes that I wrote down during the episode. Number one, who would you be and what becomes available in the absence of all of your concerns? That hit home to me. Like, what an amazing opening up of your possibilities when you take away the limiting fears and the limiting beliefs. And then he also said, if you don't create a beautiful future, your brain will create one for you, and it probably isn't going to be very good because it's based on survival. Our brain is a survival-based computer. It operates to keep us alive. It doesn't always operate to bring us joy and fulfillment and happiness and success. That comes from us, and that comes from learning to work with our brain. Envision a future without limitations. Any fear-based future concerns are put there artificially by your brain. Let them go. They serve you no purpose. Again, these are all Peter Krohn quotes from episode 55 of The Broken Brain. If you don't do your mental housekeeping, you can work your ass off and not get anywhere. That also was like, wow. It was affirming for me at this moment in my life where I'm going down this path of self-improvement, that it was very reassuring that I was doing the work that I needed to do to succeed. If I don't do my mental health work, then I can work my ass off and not get anywhere. And I feel like I'm always working my ass off. It has to do with adult ADHD. I feel like I spin out a lot. I am very busy all the time, and I don't always have something to show for my busy work. And so bringing, you know, some of that mental housekeeping to play, I can have a more focused and driven and purposeful work going on in my life, which is very rewarding. Another thing Peter Krohn shared is feelings of inadequacy reveal places where I am not internally free. So that's something that he encouraged. When you feel fear in your life or you feel like you're inadequate, write it down. You know, just write down that feeling of inadequacy, and that will give you kind of a framework of things to think about. Like, these are places where you could use some exercise, some strengthening that muscle in your life. And something that Peter Krohn said, and also Elena talked about in the retreat I went to, what is life showing me that I believe I am not enough? Then I get to evaluate that statement. Look for evidence to support the belief that you're not good enough. Is it there? Is it really there? And is that evidence valid? Or is it something that you have created? Is it something that you're looking for? And what if we flip that around and we look for evidence to the contrary? So when you hear, that was a really good exercise that Elena kind of taught us, is that when you hear a defeating thought or something, some negative self-talk, look for evidence to support it. Is it there? And then look for evidence to refute it. and make a case for it. And, you know, if it's something that you feel like is an area you need to work on, then work on it. But also acknowledge that this is, you know, that it's temporary, that you can change things. You can always improve. Also, another one that always hits home to me is anger is just fear manifested. That is so true in my life. I feel like in times when my mental health is thin, and like when I was really active with speaking out against BYU during the whole rape and sexual assaults and sharing my own experiences at BYU, that was a very trying time for me with my mental health, because I was triggered often by my past experience that I had never really handled and gotten professional support for. And so I just blocked it off for 15 years of my life. And then it came back and I wasn't prepared to handle it. And so I was very angry all the time. And now looking back, I understand that the anger is fear. It was fear that had always been inside of me that was triggered and coming out, that fear of the past trauma. So when I was able to finally seek professional help, get myself into therapy, talk about what was going on, then that anger quickly subsided in my life and I was able to stop yelling at everybody that I loved. So that made a huge difference. I highly recommend therapy. So something that I say to myself a lot that I'm working on stopping saying is things like, I'm so stupid, or I'm so dumb. And it's really easy for us to say those things. Like when I'm looking for something in the fridge and there it is, and I didn't find it earlier, and I say, I'm so dumb. There it is, right there. And I'm like, maybe I shouldn't say those things to myself. What could I say instead? And I haven't come up with a replacement yet, but I do catch myself now when I say it, which is progress. I mean, everything's about progress. I don't have all the answers yet. I wanted to focus also on, and this is just I don't have all the answers, but something that I'm thinking about. And if you have thoughts, share them with me. But I wanted to focus on an abundance mentality in my life. And that means I have this weird aversion to money. I don't know if it was something that I grew up with, that I was taught. I don't know. I think so. I'll have to work on that. But I have a hard time setting career goals for myself that involve making money or making money goals, because I feel like that I don't want money to be something that means something to me in my life. I want people and relationships and experiences to be what's most important to me. And so I wrestle with money and how it relates to people and relationships and experiences. So I want to change kind of my mind frame into a more abundance mentality and just picture what my life would be like if money weren't an object, if money weren't a concern, if we had the money to have the experiences that we may dream about as a family, and just kind of think about that and help and maybe change a lot of my negative hangups with money and fear and feeling like I'm not worthy of making a lot of money. These are all really hard issues. And again, this is unresolved confessions. This is not solutions. I'm just talking. Something I wrote down in my journal also on the mindfulness is that I want to serve my people. I want to find my tribe. I want to be with the people who are farther along the journey than I am. I need to find people in my life to push me, to encourage me to success, that are going to be my cheerleaders and to push me towards excellence. I need that in my life. So that's what I have to share for mindfulness. I wanted to talk to you about those two other topics. So this, again, these are just, this is, I'm going to be totally off the cuff. This is not prepared. Confession number one, I still carry my temple recommend. I stopped attending church in 2012 kind of as a byproduct of divorce. I no longer felt safe in the congregation because my current bishop at the time of my divorce was protecting my sexually predatory ex-husband who had offended against children. He knew all, like, we had both sat there and confessed all of the things that he had done. And a week later, he called my ex-husband, oh, he's my husband at the time, to serve in the young men's presidency. And that was crushing to me because it, and I recognized this recently, that it invalidated my reaction, my response to my husband's predatory behavior. I had already made a decision that this was not something I wanted in my life, that it was not okay. I called the police. I kicked him out. I filed for divorce. Those are the decisions that I made. Then we went to the bishop. My husband and I both shared all of the behaviors and the why I was leaving. And to have my bishop then not punish him, not discipline him, not call the police or, you know, put him, somehow protect the congregation from a predator. He instead exalted him. He rewarded him. He gave him a calling in the young men's presidency. He put him in contact with the very population of youth that he was offending against. And that was heartbreaking to me. And it felt like major rejection and major invalidation of the decisions that I had made for my life in regards to my ex-husband. So that was really rough. So I threw, and this is something that as I'm thinking about my past currently with, without judgment and trying to learn from my past actions and learn who I am and how I react in situations. When I moved to Arizona away from my ex, and I didn't intend to go inactive, it just sort of happened. So I moved to Arizona and I tried to be active, and I would show up at church in a new ward, and inevitably they would, you know, welcome me to the ward and they would encourage me to go talk to the bishop because I was new to the ward. And right then and there, my body was like, that's not happening. We don't feel safe. We can't do that. You're not going to talk to the bishop. And so I maybe would go and feel really uncomfortable. And then I just ghost out and get in my car and drive home. And then I'd try another ward. I tried the family ward. I tried a singles ward. And both times my body would just be like, no, we can't do it. I can't be there. I don't feel safe. I don't feel comfortable. Like, I had all kinds of heebie-jeebies and just my body was screaming that I could not be in church. And so I would just, the next week, Sunday would roll around and I'd just be like, I can't do it. I cannot bring myself to get ready and go. And so I stopped attending in 2012. Again, not because of any church history or anything like that. It was just I fundamentally did not feel safe in that community after my bishop had protected my husband, who is a sexual predator, and put him in a position where he could continue to harm children in that ward. He put the entire congregation at risk. And that was devastating and invalidated. Like I said, invalidated my own decisions about, you know, what I thought about my husband's behavior. So I still have my Temple Recommend in my wallet. I'm getting to that, I promise. And I kept it in my wallet because I still believed. And I kept believing, even though I had a boyfriend, we had a beautiful child, we got married. My current husband is a never Mormon. So I was out of the culture. You know, I wasn't attending church. My family obviously is still Mormon, so it's still a part of my life in that respect, but I was removed enough. But I always told my husband that I would go back to church, my current husband, and he was supportive, and he knew that that was a part of who I was. And it wasn't until 2016 and me speaking out just sharing my experience at BYU in conjunction with the sexual assault and rape in 2016, and that experience is when I decided that I could no longer be a part of the church. That's when I lost any desire to return because I understood that the entire faith community was toxic and dangerous. And so I didn't want to be a part of it anymore. But my Temple Recommend, I've changed wallets 3 times since 2012, and I've transferred that Temple Recommend 3 times. And I feel like, and it's still there. Like, here I am talking about it, processing it with you. I've taken it out and looked at it and put it right back in. It's still there right now at this moment in my wallet. And I feel like a lot of the baggage and the reason why I've kept it there is because your temple recommend as a Mormon represents your worth and your worthiness and your eternal prospects. If you have that temple recommend in your wallet, it shows that at one point, at least, I was living up to the standards that I was required to live up to in order to be part of the faith community, and part of, you know, to return to heaven and God's presence and all that. And obviously, my feelings about all of that have changed, but the emotion behind that little card and what it represents and the meaning that it gives, the approval that it gives my life and me is still there. And so that's what I want to work on, like, severing. Like, why the heck am I still, there are still parts of me, even though I'm, like, done with Mormonism. I'd love to move on and not think about it anymore. But there's still parts of me that are caught up in that. And I feel like that's a really, the temple recommend thing is something that tangible to show me that there's still things about Mormonism that are holding me back. So yeah, confession. Who else has a temple recommend still? Anybody? Is it current? Do you still hold on to it? Or did you burn it? Tell me. I want to hear. Whew. So, second topic. I got boobs. And they've impacted my life since about fourth grade. And I can't say that the impact was positive at the beginning. My earliest memory is fourth grade. I had to get a training bra. And no one else in my grade needed a training bra, just me. And it didn't feel exciting to have something that no one else had, to have a different body than my peers. That felt weird. And as mean girls do, when you see something about someone that you wish you had, often a response is judgment and teasing and just being mean. Like, jealousy is ugly. And so a lot of that came out when I first started, you know, discovering that I had boobs. And that was rough. That my friends kind of rejected that about me. And I became kind of, you know, an other because I had something different. Then in fifth grade, this really cute boy that I liked, who was funny and he was short like me, and he wanted to be my boyfriend, and I was super excited. And then within like a day or two of our official like boyfriend girlfriend status, like in fifth grade, it means nothing but a title. There's nothing really that changes about our behavior. But I found a stick drawing that he had made of me and then tried to throw over the fence at recess so I wouldn't see it. And I tackled him because I was a tough girl and I wanted to see it. And it was stick me with two giant circles for boobs. And this was my first introduction into what it felt like to be defined by your body parts. And it felt awful. And I was furious at him for not seeing me as a friend, but just as a set of boobs. And I was immediately devastated and ashamed of my chest and realized that, you know, I couldn't have real relationships because all I was a pair of boobs. So that sucked. Then when I was in junior high, so this was like seventh grade, in between classes, this boy got a giant cup, like a big gulp cup of water, and threw it on my chest, on the front of me, on my shirt, right in front of a teacher, even. And his reasoning was that he wanted to see what my boobs looked like wet because he wanted to know if I stuffed my bra with toilet paper. And so that was humiliating. That was really, really shitty. And they became a commodity, these boobs. to boys, to asshole predatory boys who would use my boobs as currency to get back things they had stolen from me. Like, for instance, a pair of sunglasses. And, like, these aren't friends. These are just guys in my classes in high school. Guy in my Spanish class stole my sunglasses, and then he told me, and I liked these sunglasses a lot. They were cool. I liked them a lot. Wanted them back. And he's like, oh, well, if you want your sunglasses back, you got to show me your boobs. And of course, he wanted to touch him and blah, blah, blah. And he wasn't going to do it until he wasn't going to give me my sunglasses back until I did that. And that was like, now looking back as an adult, I'm like, that's sexual assault. That's manipulation. Of course, I didn't realize that as a kid, but now I do. So shitty dudes, shitty boobs. got to catch myself. Dudes are shitty. Boobs are not. We're going to change that thought. Whew. So yeah, gross. But the thing that still runs around in my head as an adult is not so much those experiences. I mean, those experiences obviously taught me what my boobs were to everyone else. But also having conservative modesty and purity culture parents, they treated the fact that I had boobs very rough. Remember baby doll tees that were really, really popular in the 90s? They were super cute. They were like cut really thin and they had like tiny little cap sleeves and they always had like cute little graphic. They're like little graphic tees. And so they were super popular in the 90s. Like we went from really baggy clothes to all of a sudden these tiny cute little shirts, and they were adorable and fun, and I wanted to wear all of them, and I wasn't allowed to. My dad said to me, you can't wear the same things other girls wear because you have boobs or you have curves. That was always his excuse. So I would come home from the mall with my cute little outfits that everyone else was wearing, and they were like no skin showing. But he was like, oh, it's too tight on your boobs. Oh, the words go right across your boobs. Oh, blah, 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 blah. And there was always a reason why I couldn't wear the cute clothes that everyone else wore. So I had to go back to the stupid, baggy, gross, ugly clothes. So that sucked. And the internalized messaging that I kind of heard and received at that point in my life was that my body was shameful and that I had to hide my body and that no one could ever see it. My mom hated my body, especially my boobs. I just always felt this resentment from her, this disgust with my boobs. Like, she just, I felt like she was embarrassed that I had boobs and embarrassed when they would accidentally peek out from a shirt or look too big in a tight shirt or whatever. Like, bathing suits were awful. Everyone else wore cute little one pieces. My mother insisted that I wear the Speedos that went all the way up to my neck, which doesn't hide your boobs. They still looked really big. Speaking of, I found a picture that I will post on Facebook. No, I'll put it in the show notes for you. Of me when I was in grade school in a Speedo with some other girls. So you can have a little glimpse of my childhood. I'll post that for you. So yeah, this is something that I'm struggling with. By the time I made it to college, I went to BYU, I had learned to strap them down. So I would wear an underwire bra, like the granny ugly kind, because those gave you the tightest coverage. Then I would wear a sports bra on top of that to always a size too small to suck them in even more. So that was two layers. And then I would find compression garment tank tops that, you know, that ribbing kind that, like, you know, you put on your legs for circulation. It's ribbed and it squeezes you really tight. Well, I had one of those for my chest. And so I would wear those three layers. And by the time I put all those three layers on and it just pancake squished me in, then I would suddenly look like my peers, and then I could fit in, and then I could wear those baby doll tees. And so that's what I wore at BYU. And it wasn't until I got married for the first time, and my husband at the time was blown away by what existed when all of those garments and compression garments and bras and layers were not in place. And so then he started to question why I did this and what was going on and why I felt like I needed to hide all of that. And that's kind of when I started really beginning to experiment with accepting my boobs. And boy, that's been a long journey. So yeah, can you guys relate to this? Especially you dudes. I mean, come on, you can relate to boobs, right? So anyway, these are some things that are topics. These are not resolved issues. This is just things that I'm working through. And I'm hoping I am not the only one shouting into the void about modesty and the LDS culture. There are some great voices out there. I did a podcast episode called The Modesty Talks that has, it is a very popular episode. So if you haven't listened to The Modesty Talks with Lauren Vega, then you definitely need to check it out. I'll put that episode in the show notes since I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it will be down there in the show notes. Wherever you're listening to this podcast, just scroll down. It will be there. Click on it. It's an excellent kind of discussion about what she's doing to bring awareness to modesty culture and the damage that it can do. So yeah, those are the topics that I wanted to talk to you about today. Oh, wait. Have I told you guys about... I feel like I have. Maybe I haven't. Have I told you about my exploration with medical marijuana, cannabis, and one of the very first really positive experiences I had? If I have already, then this is a refresher course. If I haven't, and maybe you missed that episode, then here we go. So, at the beginning, I utilized edibles. I had a good friend that made me some. She hand makes her own. And so she was kind enough to make me a batch. And I started experimenting with that and what it felt like and what doses were going to be right and how I would feel and if there were any, you know, if I could feel benefits. And one evening, there was a lot of like, oops, too high situations at the beginning that were kind of fun to work through. So one of those oops, too high situations luckily happened right before bed. I was getting ready for bed, put my pajamas on. My husband was doing the same. He was chatting. And something came up. And so kind of an old source of conflict between us that is a holdover from his first marriage and some trauma that he endured with his first relationship and, you know, and other relationships, basically a betrayal trauma that comes up. And he, you know, he'll get those feelings. Then he'll ask me a question or he'll say something accusatory, not, you know, because something that I have done has triggered those fears in him. And so instead of immediately getting defensive, defending myself, explaining to a T why he shouldn't be suspicious of me, getting mad that he didn't trust me, like I have every other time this argument comes up, okay, we're going to use the word high. I was floaty. My brain was feeling real different. And so for the first time, my fight or flight, which is where all of those like getting defensive, getting loud, telling him he's wrong, getting mad that he doesn't trust me, like that's all a fight or flight response. And it was like when I with marijuana, I was able to like my fight or flight. This is something that I have learned about marijuana and me is that it quiets my fight or flight and it allows me to be me. It allows my brain to do the cognitive work to think through what's happening and respond appropriately and not respond out of fear or fight or flight or panic. And I mean, this happens in high anxiety social situations. Like when I went to my family reunion, I popped an edible before I joined the family. And, by the time I was feeling it was right when I walked in, and instead of constantly thinking about they're judging me, they think I'm an apostate, they don't want to, you know, they have all these terrible thoughts about me. Instead of thinking that, I was able to be present in whatever conversation I was having with them. So sorry, tangent. Back to this what could have been an argument with my husband this one night early on in my experimentation. So instead of being defensive, I listened because my brain was open to what he was saying. And suddenly I could make the connection that these things that he was saying, these fears that he was speaking, they weren't about me and anything that I was doing. They were about him. And then all of a sudden, I didn't feel the need to be defensive anymore because it wasn't about me. And I could recognize that. And so instead of the loud argumentative defense, we sat and he talked and I listened and I asked questions and I responded with compassion and understanding and we explored it. And it was an amazing experience. He became emotional. He's going to kill me. He's going to really kill me if he hears me say this. But he was emotional. And he said, "This is the first time you've ever listened to me." And then I got emotional. And I was like, "Thank God for weed." Because it allowed us to have a deeper conversation and connection than we had ever had before. Because it turned off that fight or flight defense reaction in me. And so I was really, really grateful for that experience. And so, yeah, I just wanted to share that. And just that that some of these things can be really, really helpful in us as we kind of are on this journey of healing and self-discovery and healing our own and others, you know, neuroses around us and reactions to trauma. So anyway, that was exciting to me. Some upcoming topics that I want that are on my mind are Mormonism taught me to lie. I know that this may sound weird and it also may be like, oh, that's so true. And what I mean by that is like, think about your bishop worthiness interviews. Think about, you know, talking to your parents about, I mean, any little things like there are like Mormonism is such a high demand, controlling religion that there are so many little things like you can have thought sins. You can think and sin. It's just terrible. There's nothing, everything is wrong. Natural man is an enemy to God. Like, I was stuck in survival mode as a child, trying to learn how to survive in this high demand religion. And so I feel like as a survival tactic, I learned how to lie, to not be vulnerable, to not be authentic, to hide who I really was, because who I really was a natural man and it was sinful and I would be punished and it was just never acceptable. And so I learned to hide who I was, to lie about who I was. And this is like little things. This isn't like, I don't know, just little tiny stuff, like the stupidest stuff to lie about. I wish I had an example, but this is something that I didn't realize until I started dating my current husband, and he would catch me in stupid little stuff. And he's like, "Why are you lying about whatever?" Oh, here's a good example. Masturbation. You all know we lie about masturbation. Well, when I'm in a relationship and he would like just kiddingly say something about it, and I would just immediately freeze. I'd freeze. I would panic. And I would lie through my teeth. And he's like, "Why are you lying about this?" Like, he just didn't understand the concept of why I would lie about masturbation. So, yeah, think about that, because that's an upcoming discussion that I want to have. So throw me your input. There are lots of things that I asked for your input on. I hope you can remember them. Like your temple recommend. Boobs. If you have any experience with boobs growing up Mormon. And Mormonism taught me to lie. I want to talk about that. So yeah, is that enough? You know how to get a hold of me. The voicemail is 435-494-1427. Or if you'd rather text it, you can email me at mormonhappyhour@gmail.com. You can send me a DM on Instagram at mormonhappyhour. I'm also on Twitter, but I'm not real good at checking it. And Facebook, you know where to find me on Facebook. We have the Mormon Happy Hour group. There's the Mormon Happy Hour page. And there's also the website angelsonfire.org, where my Mormon Happy Hour podcast lives. You can contact me through the website as well. So yeah, thanks so much for listening. I hope that some of this resonated with you. I have some great ideas for upcoming episodes. I'm in this place where I kind of want to run away from Mormonism, but I don't want to run away from Mormon Happy Hour. So the podcast is going to morph to follow my journey. And I had a good friend reach out to me. She's been on the podcast before. Her name is Delaney Darko. She's a writer. She's amazingly talented. She's hilarious. And she actually reached out to me this week and we kind of talked about I'm in a burnout place. And she recommended that I just interview my friends who have kind of moved on in this Mormonism journey also and where we are now. So she's going to go first. So I'm really excited about setting that up, having that conversation with her. Fun thing my therapist said to me yesterday as I was talking to her about Mormonism. We talked about the stages of leaving Mormonism, where you're a Mormon, then you find out some shitty stuff, then you're an ex-Mormon. And you can be you're probably an angry ex-Mormon, a bitter ex-Mormon, and you do a lot of research and Mormonism becomes way more important in your life and way more involved and take over way more of your thoughts than it ever did when you were Mormon. So all of a sudden you're like this hyper ex-Mormon. And that lasts for, I don't know, as long as this is sustainable for you in your life. Depends, different for every person. And then you kind of fade out and you become an ex-Mormon, where you just want to be a normal person and not be tied to Mormonism, not think about Mormonism, not give a shit about it. That's where you want to be. And that's kind of where I am right now, getting to that point, really sick and tired of hearing all of the shit that keeps coming out of the church because nothing changes. It's just terrible. And I just want to find more positive real life things. But I also have a lot of healing and baggage. So it's good to kind of be in the space because I get to be aware of my triggers and the areas where I need to work on. But my therapist said that leaving Mormonism and staying in Mormonism when we're all there, this may feel shitty for me to be talking bad about this stage if you're in this stage. So bear with me. I was there. I know. I'm not pointing fingers at you. I'm not accusing. I've been there. This is how it feels. I know. But ex-Mormonism, before you're an ex-ex-Mormon, it's kind of like stalking an ex on Facebook to make sure their life is miserable. And you're just so involved and invested in caring about the misery or the awfulness or how shitty they are as a person. And you're just kind of stuck in that stage. And that's not healthy either. And so moving on and becoming an ex-ex-Mormon, that's kind of the end goal, right? So anyway, I love you guys. Thanks for sticking through. There's lots of great things coming up. I also want your feedback since this is a relationship. I can't do this show without you. I want to know what you want to hear about too. I want us to be a community and have a conversation. So if you are looking, do you have ideas that you want to explore or hear about on Mormon Happy Hour? Let me know about those too. So anyway, I think I've rambled enough. I love you guys. Thanks for listening. And I'll catch you next week. And that wraps up today's topics. We are so glad you stopped by. Be sure to join the Mormon Happy Hour on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon. If you smiled, please drop us a 5-star review wherever you found us. See you next week. Cheers.